南無妙法蓮華経南無妙法蓮華経南無妙法蓮華経 Hello friends, I hope this finds you safe and in good health. We continue with chapter 8, 500 disciples receive prediction of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. I want to take just a moment just to share a thought with you. I was watching the sunset. And, you know, all the beautiful colors. And, you know, the analytical part of me wants to break down why those colors are there, what's in the atmosphere, clouds, smoke, whatever. But just appreciating, just kind of the subtle awe that we feel, really, not just in our minds, but bodily, of just this ephemeral moment. It really is. And then the thought crossed my mind, so kind of a samsaric thought, actually, that I was going to miss it when it was gone. And then I thought about that thought, and there's something about sunsets that whether we think about it explicitly or not, the fact is that we know that it's happening and changing moment to moment. Yeah? We may not think it in those terms, but we know if we stop watching, it may be gone. And that we're so fortunate to have caught it while it was happening. Because had we been doing something for just a minute or two, we might have missed the whole thing. But we just happened to look at the horizon as the sun was setting, and maybe we had the fortune to tell our friends or our loved one, or maybe we're just alone, to think, oh, it's going to happen any minute now. Let's just sit here and calmly focus on the horizon and watch it come about. Those are special moments too. But my point is, from the beginning through the sunset, as it changes to its disappearance, every moment of that sunset is special. Every moment is a different sunset. We know this. We sense it. We sense the incredible fortuitousness, the opportunity of it, the preciousness of it, and the loss of it. Because with every successive moment, oh, wow, look at the colors coming up over there too. And oh, it's dissipating over there. There's this constant discovery, deep appreciation, love, you might say, and loss, and a little bit of grieving. Oh, it's over. It's still very pretty. Yeah, but it's not what it was. Yeah, you're right. It's still pretty. Look, it's going. You could almost watch the moments of change in a sunset. And I thought that, you know, it's so obvious, no matter what your culture, your language, your sex, your pronoun, your political, none of that matters. Every human being, and probably some animals, understand without having it explained to them that this is a happening, constantly changing thing, and there's just this small window of opportunity to observe it, to witness it. Right? Now comes the Buddhist part. All that Shakyamuni is asking us to do is really that simple. To see with those same eyes and mind that watches a sunset that your friend, that you, that your guitar, that your country, that your environment, that the seat I'm sitting on, ooh, mouth isn't working well this morning. All of it is like that sunset. All of it. It's currently just like that sunset. It's formulating, it's kind of momentary existence, constantly changing, and at some point it'll just not be there anymore. And like the sunset, you don't want to miss a moment. You're already in love with its coming to be and grieving its coming to be gone. If we looked at everything that way, every phenomena that way, do you know anyone who hates sunsets? Yeah. A thought experiment I thought I'd share. Interesting, yeah? Okay. Enough blah, blah, blah. Thanks for indulging me. All right, continuing. Constantly with tactful methods, he shall fearlessly teach the law and lead incalculable beings to attained perfect knowledge. Sunset knowledge. And revering the Tathagata, and guarding the treasure of the law, he shall afterwards become a Buddha, whose title will be Law Radiance. His domain, named Excellent Purity, will be formed of the precious seven jewels, and his kalpa will be called Jewel Radiance. His bodhisattvas, a great host, infinite kotas in number, all accomplished in great transcendent faculties and perfect in dread powers. Is that right? Dread powers? Will fill that domain to the full. I have to look that up. Numberless also will be his sravakas, students, obviously, with the three clear views and eight emancipations who have attained the four unhindered wisdoms. Such will be his monks. All the living in that domain will be free from carnal passions, pure and born by transformation, adorned with all the signs. Those transformations aren't magical transformations from an urn to a human, right? Transformations in the mind, right? From ignorance to Shravaka, through so on and so forth, right? Joy in the law and pleasure in meditation shall be their food, with no thought of other. No womankind will be there, nor any deluded and malicious ways. And I think by womankind, he's not speaking of women, the sex, so much as he's talking about the distraction of fornication. Right? The thing that we're bred to breed, that our human saha world existence depends on that samsaric mind. But also that samsaric mind is what impedes, isn't that a conundrum, our maximal joy, right? Like Nichiren said, go home, Shijo Kingo, and make love to your wife. And the both of you, while you're in the act, look in each other's eyes and chant. This sounds so simple, but I guarantee if you try it, whatever drives your lust will disappear. It will be a very strange occurrence. It's very difficult to chant and be in the throes of lust and sexual samsaric reality, to make that mental shift to where you can chant and be in the act of procreation without all of the regular samsaric motivators. Ah. Hey, don't drive yourself crazy doing it, but you may try it just to see, wow, the mind really does work differently when you awaken the Buddha eye. The perceived craving and needing that drives most of our sexual lovemaking just halts. Now what? There has to be a different motivation, right? To be in that moment of joyful being, you would think, well, that should be easy. Try it. And I only say that because it comes up quite a few times, doesn't it? This woman problem. Well, only to a misogynist, but same thing for you ladies, right? Whatever your persuasions. And I don't want to go through the pronouns. It's so boring. But certainly you agree procreation is between two sexes. At least one with a womb, for crying out loud. I don't know if we're there yet, but okay, sidetrack. Numberless also will be his Sravakas with the three clear views, the eight emancipations, who have attained the four unhindered wisdoms. Such will be his monks, all living in that domain. The Bhikshu Purna, complete in all his merits, shall gain this pure land where the wise and sages abound. Such are the boundless things of which I have now but briefly spoken. And I have an annotation, go figure. This is one of those sections that confuse many academics and casual readers of the Lotus, as it seems to suggest some sort of infiltration into lesser vehicle practices in order to convert those within to the higher Bodhisattva vehicle and later Buddha vehicle. Indeed, the example translation is another aspect of skillful means or expedience. The idea is to speak to other monks at their level of understanding to promote further knowledge and to help them aspire to the higher paths, eventually leading them to the Buddha vehicle. This is illustrated as a tactful means in comparison with a direct imposing type of teaching of the Buddha vehicle as superior and therefore requisite for practice. The seesaw between Shoju and Shakubuku, yeah? The latter would most likely create immediate resistance and therefore negative obstacle to the Buddha path. Which is to say, if you use the wrong method to teach others, you endanger their enlightenment and by environment, yours as well. Shakubuku is a practice of breaking bad habits of other Buddhists. Shoju is the teaching method promoted by Shakyamuni. You have to meet people where they are and then make them aspire to grow because it's their practice. You're just facilitating it. Right? You can't shove Buddhism into somebody or Buddha-ness or Bodhisattva-ness. It has to come from within them. That's where the Buddha lies anyway. Yeah. So if you run around just tossing around Shakubuku as your call to arms, you're likely to distance a lot of people and maybe turn them off to the idea that they can be enlightened altogether. What a horrible cause that would be, right? So this is a tale of caution. When Nichiren talked about Shakubuku and his life as an example, think about Nichiren's life. We don't read a lot of the letters he wrote to followers. In most cases, like Shijo Kingo was a follower, but Shijo Kingo was also a teacher, spreading and influencing many others. And that's, if it's not that we're reading of Nichiren's, it's remonstrations and letters to other teachers of different schools and straightening them out and railing against the government and training his own disciples for debate. And everything he was doing was shakubuku of other Buddhists who were going the wrong way. That's shakubuku. That's what it's for. But when he was talking to ladies about their menstrual cycles and how they should treat that period of the, no pun intended, of the month in regards to their Buddhist practice, he wasn't using shakubuku, right? You read any of his letters to people, followers, they're very kind, almost falling over himself with appreciation, quoting from Shakyamuni, quoting from Tendai, quoting from Dengyo, quoting from Chinese lore, or whatever was relevant to that person, he used to show them where their answers are, not from him, but from Buddhism and its teachings. That's the greatest lesson you can derive from Nichiren's Gosho. Makes sense. And he tells us in the Gosho, do as I do. He's our mentor, our exemplar. Is he our teacher? Only in that he teaches to use the teachings. And whenever he talks about himself, he's using the story of Nichiren as a proof of, once again, quoting the teachings and indicating how his life mirrors what the teachings say. He never says, well, I would never eat that. I don't see why you are. No, ever, never. Then the 1,200 arhats of self-reliant mind reflected thusly. Delighted are we to gain this unprecedented experience. If the world-honored one would predict for each of us our future destiny, as for the other great disciples, how glad should we be? The Buddha, knowing the thoughts in their minds, addressed Mahakashyapa. Now, again, this frustrates me. I understand the storytelling. I do. But these arhats, again, they still haven't let go of the idea that they have to be bequeathed Buddha-ness. How many chapters have we read with, you do this. This is yours to do. But with his compassion, he understands they've been doing this a long time. And so what harm could it be? I'll tell them I'll give it to them, but I'm not. He doesn't have to give them permission to become enlightened. For crying out loud, you've had my permission since day one. Just do it. But okay. I mean, I don't think I'd have that much patience. These 1,200 arhats, he says to them, let me now, in their presence, and in order to predict for them, he's letting them know, perfect enlightenment. Okay? Amongst this assembly, my great disciples, Kaudinya Bhikshu, after paying homage to 62,000 kodas of Buddhas, will become a Buddha whose title will be Universal Light, Tathagata, worthy of praise, all-wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well-departed, understander of the worlds, peerless leader, controller, teacher of universal realms of influence and men, Buddha, world-honored one. Now, do you see, it's kind of clever. If I'm going to have to predict your enlightenment for you or give you permission to do same, let me first say that after you've basically converted hundreds of thousands of people, then you'll become Buddha. Gotcha. Right? set about the true work of a bodhisattva, a lotus bodhisattva, who knows enlightenment in your own mind and helping others to achieve it, well, then you can become a Buddha. Wink, wink. It's not a deception. He's not lying. But he's saying, if you're going to force me to tell you what you should already know, let me put a caveat in there that says you need to do the work, which is true anyway. That's Buddha wisdom. Of the rest of those arhats, 500, Uruvilva, Kashyapa, Gaya Kashyapa, I hope he's not going to list all 500. Anyway, he's got a list here. Kunda, who we read about in the Nirvana, the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, yeah. Svagata and others, all will attain to perfect enlightenment, all with the same title, namely universal light. At that time, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. Kaudinya Bhikshu will see innumerable Buddhas, and after Asamkaya Kalpas have passed, accomplish Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Ever emitting great light, perfect in transcendent powers, his fame spread over the universe, revered by all beings, ever teaching the supreme way, his title will be Universal Light. And isn't that the supreme way anyway? These words, fascinating as they are all in service of the same mission. Yeah? Mark that page. Ever emitting great light, perfect in transcendent powers, his fame will spread over the universe. Revered by all beings, ever teaching the supreme way, his title will be Universe Light. Pure will be his domain. His bodhisattvas will all be brave. All mounted on wonderful buildings, they will travel through all lands with unsurpassed offerings to present them to the Buddhas. Having made these offerings, their hearts will be greatly rejoiced and soon return to their own domain. Such will be their supernatural powers, their sphere of influence, yeah? That Buddha's life will be 6 myriad kalpas. His right Dharma law will remain twice his lifetime, and the semblance law double that. His law ended, universal realms of influence and men will feel sorrow. 500 other bhikshus, one by one, shall become Buddhas. With the same title, universal light, in turn each shall predict, saying, after my extinction, so-and-so shall become Buddha. The world which he instructs shall be as mine of today. So there will be this continuance of the teaching of this perfect law through this lineage of influence from one to another. The splendid purity of their domain and its transcendent powers, its bodhisattvas and shravakas, its right dharma and its semblance dharma, the length of its kalpa period, all will be as that above stated. Kashyapa, you now know, of these 500 self-reliant ones, the other band of shravakas will also be like them. To these who are not in the assembly, do you proclaim my words? Thereupon, the 500 arhats present before the Buddha, having received this prediction, ecstatic with joy, instantly rose from their seats, went before the Buddha, made reverence at his feet, repented their errors, and rebuked themselves, saying, world-honored one, we have constantly been thinking that we had attained final nirvana. Now we know that we were just like the foolish ones. For what reason? Because we ought to have obtained the Tathagata wisdom, and yet we're content with inferior knowledge. Yeah, why'd you do that? You're just now realizing it? But that's okay. That's what this sutra is about, getting you unstuck and providing the supreme vehicle for all living beings, but certainly for you guys who should be the preeminent teachers. Hello? So they're realizing it now, finally. World Honored One, it is as if some man goes to an intimate friend's house, gets drunk, and falls asleep. Meanwhile, his friend, having to go forth on official duty, ties a priceless jewel within his garment as a present and departs. Do you remember this parable? The man, being drunk and asleep, knows nothing of it. On arising, he travels onward till he reaches some other country, where for food and clothing he expends much labor and effort, right? Kind of like the son that ran away from his dad and sees himself as unworthy of anything more than just eating for food and shelter. Laboring for food and shelter. And undergoes exceedingly great hardship and is content even if he can obtain but a little. Later, his friend happens to meet him and speaks thus, "My friend, sir, how is it that you have come to this for the sake of food and clothing? Wishing you to be in comfort and able to satisfy all your five senses, your skandhas, I formerly, in such a year, in such a month, on such a day, tied a priceless jewel within your garment. Now, as of that day, it is present there, and you, in ignorance, are slaving and worrying to keep yourself alive. How very foolish. Go you now and exchange that jewel for what you need, and do whatever you will, free from all poverty and shortage. I gave you the highest opportunity you could have for every comfort you could wish for, and you didn't even search your own jacket. You just slovenly went along, slavishly working, thinking yourself incapable of reaching anything better, all the while having this priceless jewel right there in your pocket. Gosh, how pathetic. The Buddha is also like this. I gave you the perfect teaching, but you refused to see it. When he was a bodhisattva, he taught us to conceive the idea of perfect wisdom, but we soon forgot. Neither knowing nor perceiving, having obtained the arhat way, we said we had reached nirvana. That false nirvana, right? The temporary nirvana, the counterfeit dharma, a semblance dharma. Sounds like it, but it's not it. In the hardship of gaining a living, we had contented ourselves with a mere trifle. They're all great teachings, but they fall far short of the goal, the intended goal, yeah. But our aspirations after perfect wisdom still remain, and we're never lost, and now the World Honored One arouses us and speaks thus, Bhikshus, that which you have obtained is not final nirvana. For long I have caused you to cultivate the roots of Buddha goodness, and for tactful reasons have displayed a form of nirvana, but you have considered it to be the real nirvana that you had obtained. World Honored One, now we know we are really bodhisattvas, predicted to attain perfect enlightenment. For this cause, we greatly rejoice in our unprecedented gain. You should also lament the wasted time, but... Thereupon, Ajnata Kaudinya and the others, desiring to announce this meaning over again, spoke thus in verse. We, hearing his voice predicting for us unsurpassed comfort, perfect enlightenment, rejoice in our unexpected lot and salute the all-wise Buddha. Now, before the World Honored One, we repent our errors. There it is. Though countless Buddha treasures awaited, with but a trifle of nirvana, We, like ignorant and foolish people, were ready to be content. Well, this is our lot. It is like the case of a poor man who goes to the house of a friend. That friend, being very rich, sets much food before him, a priceless, precious jewel he ties in his inner garment, secretly giving it and departing, while he sleeps on unaware. The man, when he arises, travels on to another country in search of food and clothes to keep alive, suffering great hardships for his living, contented with ever so little, wishing for nothing better, never perceiving that in his inner garment there is a priceless jewel. The friend who gave him the jewel afterwards sees this poor man and, bitterly rebuking him, shows where the jewel is bound. What are you doing? Look, you have all of this wealth. Don't stop living like this. The poor man, seeing this jewel, is filled with a great joy, rich in possessions of wealth. He can satisfy his five senses, unfortunately. As we know, satisfying those five senses is also a trap, yeah? The skandhas. But never mind, the story still holds. Such were also we like this. In other words, the arhats, by that story, by that parable, that story, admit that what they thought they had achieved as enlightenment, well, nirvana, was no better than somebody who was looking to satisfy the five skandhas. This is what I keep saying. They had not, they talk about their last body, but they talk about it like it's some great thing. They're still satisfying their skandhas. And they're admitting it literally right here. For long has the world-honored one always pitied and taught us to cultivate the highest aspiration. We fell short. But because of our ignorance, we neither perceived nor knew it. Gaining but a little of nirvana, contented, we sought no more. Now the Buddha has awakened us, saying this is not real nirvana. Only on attaining the highest Buddha wisdom is there real nirvana. Now, having heard from the Buddha the prediction and its glory, and the command we receive in return, or in turn, body and heart are full of joy. Now we really have something to accomplish. Isn't it something to have aspiration in our hearts? I'm saying this. And I have a little note here at the end. The jewel sewn into the garment is understood to be the jewel of Buddhahood, to be used in support of the pain-free life of perfect enlightenment. The story demonstrates that this jewel of Buddhahood is constantly with us, but remains untapped, unused, due to our ignorance and constant distractions of samsara. That's a very powerful lesson. Not a wasted chapter. Next is chapter 9. The prediction of attainment of perfect enlightenment for arhats specifically. But no doubt another lesson from another point of view. So that will be equally useful, I'm sure. Chapter 9 coming up next in this series, after which things start changing very quickly. So let's get through chapter 9, and then we'll start moving into a paradigm shift in the Lotus Sutra. Yeah, I'm ready for it. In the meantime, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support. Even if all you can do at the moment is like and subscribe, a few seconds of effort is very important for the channel to grow, to gain access, more people to this resource, not just the videos, but the free podcast, the Threefold Lotus Com website with tons of information there that you can download, print, use for your study, for your teaching, so on and so forth. The bookstore, the mandala store, all of it. All the links in the description, along with Patreon and PayPal, so that if you can, help support this channel financially. That's huge. And several of you are doing that, and I can't express my gratitude, so thank you. For all of us, right? In the meantime, please take care of your health. What was that? Please take care of your health. Keep your practice strong. Really enjoy it, right? And I will see you in the next one. Okay? Bye for now.